Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is January 8th, 2017, and this is GameBuoy Video Game Podcast, episode 128. Pretty good year, 2016 in review.
Now, you're talking about gaming pretty good year, right? Because...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2016, not a banner year in terms of basically anything other than gaming.
Yeah, thanks to gaming for saving 2016.
Yeah, some really cool stuff happened in 2016 in the world of games. I think that's really cool and really valuable to highlight. Obviously, there was a lot of very unpleasant stuff politically, socially, economically.
Entertainmentally.
Pop culturally, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
So that having been said, obviously, I still also wanted to go for the Tori Amos song reference. So in any way, welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're talking about 2016, the year that was. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy McWaggy, you want to get us started?
Yes. Mega Man 1 through 6 are available for iOS and Android, and we will talk more about that later because reasons.
Yeah. We also have word here that the newest Dissidia Final Fantasy Arcade stage is the Royal City of Rabanaster.
I want to go to there.
Final Fantasy 12. Yeah, I'm really excited to play this one. I'm in Japan in a few months. I love Final Fantasy 12, and I'm super stoked to see this stage in action.
Well, speaking of Dissidia, our next character reveal is set for January 10th. So by the time you're listening to this on the VOG Network.
On the Voice of Geeks Network over at VOGNetwork.com.
VOGNetwork.com or over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
So we'll be telling you next time who that was. Who's your money on?
I'm expecting Prince Nocht at this point. I think that, you know, we had heard that, you know, the plan was to put him in the game, but not until after 15 releases. Well, 15 has been out for a few months now, and, you know, we know that the big Final Fantasy 30th anniversary event is coming. I expect, you know, they're going to really make a real push to get representation of a character from every Final Fantasy in Dissidia, and 15 is going to need a rep.
Well, my fingers are crossed for Ariana Grande.
We have word here that Musou Stars, coming out of Tecmo Koei, or Koei Tecmo, is going to include characters Opuna and a Kasumi costume. This is exciting, Opuna in particular, because Opuna was such a really cute and neat Wii RPG back from 2007. Did not gain a lot of traction, but it was just a marvelous, delightful little game. And so to see Opuna getting some love in 2017 is just very nice to see.
You forgot the most important part of this update.
What's that?
That the Treasure Box Edition in Japan will have two posters featuring, one featuring male characters at the Hot Springs and the other featuring female characters at the Hot Springs. And I'm quite enjoying the male characters at the Hot Springs poster.
Huh. I wonder if I'll be able to find a Treasure Box Edition when I'm in Japan in March when this game releases.
Yeah, you can keep the female Hot Spring poster. I'll take the male one.
No, I will keep them both and frame them and put them side by side in my bathroom, obviously.
Oh my god, and then it'll get a little steamy in there.
We also have word here that Ariana Grande will be making an appearance in Final Fantasy Brave Exvius. She is going to be a new character with unique sprites and abilities. And in addition to that, they are adding a really fantastic remix of her song Touch It to the game.
It's pretty Final Fantasy.
Dude, right? It's really cool. You know, this was actually surprisingly controversial. A lot of the traditional gamers really hating on this online. What is your thought on Ariana Grande in Final Fantasy Brave Exvius?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm not an Ariana expert. I enjoy her music, but as far as I know, she's pretty popular in Japan. I mean, I don't know if you...
I believe that's a true statement.
No more than that. But also, Final Fantasy, at least for the past 15 years, ish or more, has had a relationship with pop music, or, you know, Square Enix in general. I mean, you have Kingdom Hearts with Utada, you have...
Well, you have Gackt literally appearing in one of the Final Fantasy games himself.
Right, Florence and the Machine doing music for Final Fantasy 15. I mean, and even when you think Final Fantasy 8, Fei Wan was a really popular singer. I know she was Chinese, but or is Chinese, but I believe that she did Japanese language albums as well, so, I mean, I know that... And I mean, then you have things like Final Fantasy X had pop music. Final Fantasy X-2 is literally about Yuna being a pop musician.
Which is a reductive read, but I appreciate why it appears that way.
So, I mean, I am not bothered by it. I mean, I guess it's because some people are bothered by, like, the celebrity appearance in the game. But again, like you said, Gackt was literally basically one of the characters from...
Yeah, well, the character G, Genesis, was absolutely in the compilation of Final Fantasy VII games. And it was character modeled on him. He did a song for Dirge of Cerberus. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that different from that.
I don't think it bothers me that much. The criticism that confused me the most was when people were like, oh, this is going to doom Final Fantasy in Japan. I'm like, not really. People are probably going to be super excited to get the little bunny ears Arianda. She looks like a Fran from Final Fantasy 12.
Like, if you think Final Fantasy is super healthy in Japan right now, you need a reality check. Stuff like Final Fantasy Brave Exvius is doing much better than the actual console release games, so maybe calm down a little bit. We also have word that Rhyme has sort of popped back up. You may recall, Rhyme was announced by Tequila Works back in 2013, originally as a PlayStation 4 exclusive. It has now resurfaced. You know, we learned last year that Tequila had reacquired the rights to Rhyme from Sony. IGN assisted Tequila Works with the re-reveal by debuting exclusively the new trailer that shows some gorgeous gameplay footage, as well as announcing that the game will now be coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Yeah,
you know, I thought this looked like a really cute and interesting adventure game. I'm really excited to play it when it releases in May 2017. What are your thoughts, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, especially getting more Switch content. I'm all for it. And I mean, from what I've seen, it looks cute. I mean, I like adventure-y, puzzle-y things. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more of this.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word that God Eater will be having more information released on its new console project in 2017.
Words you never thought you would hear.
Right. You know, this is, of course, courtesy of series producer Yusuke Tomizawa-san from Bandai Namco. He has sort of been teasing on Twitter. He's been tweezing.
Tweezing must mean Twitter. Tweezing now means Twitter teasing.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with that usage. You know, he has been sporting shirts with the number 3 in the God Eater font at public events, including Tokyo Game Show 2016. He's been tweeting about, tweezing about, you know, having the new console project announcements this year. So I definitely think we can sort of pick up a pattern on what to expect here. Very exciting stuff. I like God Eater. You probably should give it a try if you haven't. And we will definitely be talking about this more as we hear it more.
And we have a little bit of an update for those of you, including myself, who are Android phone users. You can pre-register for Super Mario Run. So that probably means that it's not too far off. We do not have any further release information. So, you know, probably just making sure, I mean, especially with Android being, you know, so fragmented with not everything running the current iOS. I guess, I mean, that's sometimes true for iOS, but I mean, when you consider that Android has, like, custom OS adaptations or whatever for different developers and stuff, I can imagine that the testing process would be a little more involved. So, please look forward to it. I've been anxious for it.
Party. We also have word here that Pokemon Snap was added to the Wii U Virtual Console this week. This is, of course, big news. Pokemon Snap has a lot of fans out there, and you can pick it up now in North America on the Nintendo Wii U eShop for $9.99.
Oh man, we should do a upcoming Snapcast about that. Look back at Snap.
A look back at Snap. In other release information, we also have word that Mass Effect Andromeda will be releasing on March 23rd in Europe, March 21st in North America.
Oh wow.
Castlevania, Dracula X, and Mario Kart 64 are both also available on the eShop as virtual console games on the Wii U. Super Robot Tyson 5 will be releasing in Asia with English subtitles on February 23rd. That is, of course, for PS4 and PS Vita. Obviously, both of these consoles are region-free, so if you don't mind getting the Asian release, which, you know, typically is viewed as, among, you know, the purists, as, like, the less good version to import. But if you do that, you can play the game in English. That's pretty awesome. I will definitely be doing this, and if you out there in Internet Radio Land plan to as well, let me know and we can, I don't know, tweet about it or something.
Or more like tweets about it.
Ah! I suppose so. Well, with all of that having been said, it is time to move on to some
news. 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 Oh my god. News. goes. All right. So first off, we have the Final Fantasy 30th anniversary event information. It'll be on January 31st. This is also the date of Final Fantasy VII's 20th anniversary.
Yeah, the opening ceremony is on that January 31st. A lot of people are expecting that this is when we're going to be getting our first real new big information on Final Fantasy VII Remake. But a lot of people also talking about the fact that this is actually also the anniversary of the date back when Square Enix had that gigantic press event announcing Final Fantasy 9, 10, and 11 all at the same time.
Oh, like the Crystal Millennium or whatever? Oh, wait, no, that's Sailor Moon. It was the Square Millennium event.
Yeah, that was this same anniversary date. So a lot of people wondering if we're not going to see another big announcement like that.
Yeah, I mean, back at the Square Millennium event, that's when they introduced 9, 10, and 11 on the same day, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. So,
so we have 16, 17, and 18.
Hey, who knows? I think it's more likely, though, that we'll just get big announcements for
7 Remake.
We'll get an announcement on, maybe an announcement on Final Fantasy 16 just being in the works. But I think, yeah, the bigger focus will be on, you know, maybe a console port of Theater Rhythm Arcade. Definitely a console port of Dissidia Arcade.
I mean, we could have a release
I'm hoping for Switch ports of these games, by the by.
Yeah.
Because the Switch would be the perfect console for these games.
Especially the Theater Rhythm one. But we also have, you know, 12 Remastered, which, you know, does not have a release date yet, right?
That is correct.
So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised there. Maybe Ariana Grande will do a song.
Oh, my goodness. Could you imagine if they did a Final Fantasy remix of Into You?
Oh, my God.
Every gay on Twitter would die. So, either way, I'm super excited about this Final Fantasy event. Super excited about Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm in general. I just played that on the arcade version for the first time yesterday. I ended up playing that game alone for more than an hour solid.
It's so good.
I'm actually charging my Japanese 3DS right now so that I can play some more Theater Rhythm Curtain Call because it got the bug back in me. Anyway, in other news, we also have word that Frog Fractions 2 has been found. You may recall, of course, that Frog Fractions 2 had its Kickstarter that was successful back in 2014. A lot of people have been searching all kinds of other indie games, stuff like Firewatch, Crypt of the Necrodancer, Mini Metro, Kingdom of Loathing, Quap, because there have been some hints as to Frog Fractions 2 within all of these games, and people thought Frog Fractions 2 might be hidden within one of those games. It turns out it is actually hidden within a game by Mostly Tiger Proof and Adult Swim called Glitter Mitten Grove. Glitter Mitten Grove is a simulation game where players grow berries with fairies.
That sounds like my type of game.
The funny thing is, the Glitter Mitten Grove game is actually on its own also a pretty compelling product, and then there are two different ways that you can unlock Frog Fractions 2 within it. I don't want to spoil either of them, but the information is out there if you don't care. But if you're one like me who's into the mystery and stuff, download Glitter Mitten Grove on Steam. It's like $20. It's a good game on its own, and if you play it enough, you will eventually find Frog Fractions 2.
Okay, I usually don't talk about this isn't really a behind the scenes thing, but were you distracted by the fact that the Silicon Era article continuously referred to it as Frog Fractions 2?
Yes. Maybe they didn't actually play the game. They don't realize why it's called Frog Fractions. We also have word here that Bandai Namco has announced they will be localizing the hit mobile social RPG One Piece Thousand Storm. This is, of course, a very popular game overseas. There is currently a pre-registration event going on for the global version. You can visit Bandai Namco's website, pre-register with your email, Twitter, or Facebook, and get some prizes when the game releases.
Nice. Is there a One Piece dating sim? Because I just want to date like all of the really attractive One Piece characters.
You'll get Brooks and you'll like it. He's the skeleton.
Okay, I mean, could be worse.
We also have word here that Digimon will be celebrating its 20th anniversary with an upgraded version of the original Monster device. This is, of course, very cool news. Something that's really interesting is that even though it will be the same form factor and basically the same software as the original game, even to the point that these new new devices will fight with the old devices, with it like being perfectly compatible. They have actually changed the timers so that in order to get like your full evolution, like it used to take like a week or two of work, now it'll just take a day or two of work, which I think is very, very cool. It is going to support like fusion and stuff. So this is probably going to be like the optimal OG Digimon experience if that's what you're looking for. It's going to be releasing later this year. Japanese retailers will be taking pre-orders through March 27th.
Man, you know, they should have done Digimon Go. I mean, at this point, they couldn't get away with it probably, but like if they had hopped on that before Pokemon did, especially with like Digimon being in the digital world and like being like involved in the real world too, like, you know, the way that it is, I think it would have really worked. But
yeah, I think there could have been a good application there too. We also have word here that Hideaki Itsuno-san, whom you're probably most familiar with as a director over at Capcom on such games as Devil May Cry series and Dragon's Dogma, has confirmed he will be announcing a new game this year. Of course, the fandom is sort of split in three ways. Some people want a sequel to DMC, some people want a sequel to Devil May Cry 4, and some people want a sequel to Dragon's Dogma.
Well, we'll see.
Indeed, we will.
There is a Fire Emblem Music Collection coming up called Fire Emblem Music Collection Piano, Faith and Engagement. It is coming to Japan this February. I mean, I don't see why it would be difficult to, import a CD because CDs.
Heck, it might even end up getting on international iTunes. Yeah. That's pretty common these days.
It'll have 16 different tracks arranged for piano. Probably very beautiful.
Excellent. I'm really excited. We also have word here that Hironobu Sakaguchi Chi-san will be announcing a new Mistwalker title in 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is a big one. I'm really excited about this. We don't really know anything other than he plans to announce a new title, but you know, the day he does, we will be talking about it.
Oops, something's in the air.
We also have word here that Juntaro Kono over at Kadokawa Games is also planning to announce a new home console game in 2017.
Ooh, maybe it'll be for Switch.
We also have word that SNK is working on several titles that they hope to announce in 2017. We also have word that Idea Factory and Compile Heart, Atlas, Valhalla Games Studio, Koei Tecmo Games, Nipponichi Software, Nihon Falcom, Microsoft Japan, and 5PB all intend on announcing new console titles in 2017.
Well, Microsoft Japan just said Xbox's 15th anniversary in Japanese market. Please look forward to this year.
Well, that is one translation of it, certainly, but I had seen it as a please look forward to more information.
Okay.
We also have word here that Double Dragon 4 is coming to PlayStation 4 and PC in January. This is courtesy of Arc System Works. It is a new pixel art sequel in the style of almost like a Mega Man 9/10 kind of mold.
Yeah, it looks really cute.
Yeah, I think this is a really cool project. I'm really looking forward to this. Slaggy, I think you were really excited about this one. Do you want to talk about it?
Oh, yeah. So this is the upcoming Atlas, Atlas project that's in the works called Project ReFantasy. They recently opened a studio called Studio Zero to start developing this fantasy RPG that is going to be led by the Persona producer Katsura Hashino-san, and also has other prominent Atlas folks such as the artist Shigenori Soejima-san, composer Soji Meguro, and lots of other Persona staff. So, imagine the brilliant brains behind Persona, but with a more traditional fantasy setting. I'm super excited because, you know, I love Persona. I would say that Persona 4 is probably one of my top three favorite JRPGs, if not the top JRPG. So, I mean, for them to be doing something in that fantasy setting that, you know, that I am all about, I want more of this.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word here that Nintendo will be doing a full day of Switch streaming on Twitch and YouTube. This is going to be following the January 12th, 2017 Nintendo Switch presentation, which is going to be held at 8 p.m. this Thursday night. That's Pacific time, of course. The following day, Friday, starting at 6:30 a.m. Pacific, they will be streaming Switch games all day via a Treehouse Live event. As we know from previous Treehouse Live events, there's going to be a ton of information on game design, a ton of information information on, you know, like how these games actually play. We're going to get real good in-depth looks at these games and, you know, conversations with the designers that have that make them. I'm really excited about this, and I've actually taken this day off so that I can be here and watch it all.
The reason I said, oh man, is because I can't really take that day off.
Boo. I also do want to say something we're really excited about here in studio is that Slagkick and I plan to do a conversation immediately following that Nintendo Switch event on Thursday night. We don't know if it will be live streamed yet, but if it isn't, we do still hope to have it posted that night. So please look forward to that.
Indeed.
We also have word that Nintendo will be doing live big band and rock band music events live at the Nintendo Switch event. And awesomely, the concert performances will be broadcast streamed over Nintendo's Line account. So those are going to be taking place Saturday and Sunday, January 14th and 15th, respectively.
Oh, wow. And it's quite a long concert.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually really excited about that.
7 hours?
I mean, I think there'll be like all day festival events, but yes.
Oh, and it's the two different bands, too. Have we had the rock band before? Because I know, I mean, I've seen the big bands and I love the big bands, but I'm trying to remember if they've done the rock band before or if I just maybe haven't seen any of them.
You know, I'm not super familiar with rock band, but I am very familiar with big band, as you said.
I love the big band one, so I'm very excited about that. I'm also really excited about the rock band one.
Yeah, that's going to be really exciting, too.
What type of music do you think is going to be in the rock band, like compared to
Nintendo music played as rock music?
I'd love to hear some like of the Pokemon themes myself, but anyway, I'm just getting off topic.
All right, well then let's move forward to Culture Club, where we talk about some of the current ongoing goings on in the in the world of games and gamers. So this first piece of news, and why I got my tongue tripping on Nintendo, is that apparently many gamers out there in North America are noting that all of the Wii U's have been recalled from their local stores. Of course, a cursory glance at all of the local stores here in my own area does indicate that every shop I have checked out either sold out of all of their Wii U's or did in fact return all of their Wii U stock.
And we've got confirmation from Canada, New Zealand, and of course, you know, our own experience. So
indeed. So the TLDR here, of course, is that it looks like Nintendo is really trying to get the shelves cleared so that there's no consumer confusion at all on the Nintendo Switch, and that nobody's buying a Wii U when they're trying to get a Switch. Something I found interesting.
Harsh.
I was actually at a mall yesterday, the mall that has a Japanese arcade, and I actually saw advertisements for the Nintendo Switch at like the GameStop there.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was really interesting that Nintendo, you know, before they've even done like the whole announcement event that's going to be coming this Thursday, they already have all of the signage up for it at stores. So I definitely think that Nintendo is actively working to sort of clear the deck, so to speak.
Yeah, poor Wii U, but the thought process from, you know, the community is that they're probably going to just sell them as refurbs.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you can still get those $200 refurbs direct from Nintendo. I think it's a great price for a great console. We also have word here that Wired has terminated their contract with Chris Kohler. This is, of course, a big deal because Chris Kohler has been sort of the man behind Wired's video game coverage for like 11 years. Chris Kohler is one of the big personalities in games journalism, you know, going back more than a decade. This was actually a big deal. So I don't think we know where he's going to end up yet, but the good news here is I'm sure he will end up somewhere that is going to take advantage of this man being on the free market.
Well, there's maybe one place where he could find a new home, and that's a U.S. gamer, because Jeremy Parrish has announced that he is stepping down as editor-in-chief of U.S. Gamer. As you might remember, he kind of was without a home after 1UP closed down, which was a very, very sad day. Did some really good things with U.S. Gamer, but now is wanting to, after 14 years in the gaming media scene, step down and and focus, it seems like he really wants to shift his focus to Retronauts and kind of growing that, and his Game Boy World project, or, you know, like growing that. I mean, I don't know if he would do like NES World or whatever, but, you know, he's also done a lot of writing about game design. So, you know, we wish him the best.
Absolutely.
You know, 1UP was definitely a big influence on us early on in the way that we try to look at gaming. And, you know, US Gamer has really been one of the stronger sites to go to. So,
wishing him
the best. And I'm sure that US Gamer is going to be in good hands. I believe it's Cat Bailey the one taking over. Is that what he said?
I believe that's correct.
Isn't that his wife?
I don't know.
I'm not trying to be I'm not trying to suggest nepotism, but I'm pretty sure Cat Bailey is his wife.
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think so, but I don't know.
Oh, anyway.
Anyway, moving forward. As an aside, if you want to help support the growth of Retronauts, they are now running a Patreon for Retronauts. I believe Jeremy is also running a Patreon for Game Boy World. And between the two, he's hoping to pull in something like $10,000 a month so that he can full-time do multiple podcasts a month and update the site with content and stuff and do it as a full-time job. And good luck to him in that goal.
Okay, and I just looked at Kat Bailey's Twitter account, and she is in San Francisco. And I know Jeremy Parrish relocated to the East Coast, so I guess, I don't know why I thought they were married.
Well, if any of our listeners thought that, now they know too. We also have word here that Nintendo Switch advertisements are starting to pop up at Target stores across North America as well. So, you know, that's really exciting. We're getting closer and closer to Nintendo Switch being a real thing. I am beyond stoked about it.
Yeah, I got excited when I saw the sign and it opened up my eyes.
We also have word here that Danganronpa V3, which will be releasing in less than a week in Japan, is going to have the sharing functionality turned off past its first chapter to prevent the rampant spread of spoilers on the internet. I think that's really cool, you know. I do hope that down the line, like a month or two after release, they patch that out. But I will say, you know, I saw a lot of big PS4 releases get spoiled due to people overusing that share button. Final Fantasy 15, I saw people practically every day on Twitter getting spoiled and being upset about it. So
that sucks.
Yeah, right? So I'm actually down for this. I just hope it's temporary.
Yeah, I mean, when I've shared stuff specifically from PS4, I've tried to just do, like, in the case of Final Fantasy 15, mostly selfies, or not selfies, you know, prompto shots of the boys. And I did do one video clip where Noct was like, "Oh man, it's really hot here," and Gladio's like, "Why don't you just take your shirt off?" I was like, "Ooh, hey."
Of course you did, you thirsty troll. And last, but certainly not least, we have word here that a pilot episode of a canceled live-action TV series based on Atlas's Trauma Team game for the Wii has surfaced. There's actually like a pilot live action TV episode of a Trauma Team show. Like, what world is this? You can find it. It's all over the internet. You can find it on YouTube. We'll link you, of course, to the Silicon Era post on this over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
But it's some pretty wacky stuff. It's not particularly good, but it's wacky.
I mean, I think the premise for, you know, about being like underground doctors, like, I think that, like, if it was done well, I think that, like, you know, that could have been something that, like, coworkers that don't know about video games are like, "Oh yeah, did you watch Trauma Center?" And then you're like, "Oh yeah, that's based on an Atlas series of games." And they're like, wait, what about your Atlas? Where are you traveling?
Oh,
LOL,
man.
LOL people who don't know about games.
It's super funny because I had taken it to, like, a Charles Atlas place and I'm like, "Ooh, look at this little weakling over here.
In just 10 days, I can make you a man."
All right, moving forward, we also have some news that is
controversial.
Oh my god.
Our first piece of controversial news here is that Naoki Yoshida-san, the Final Fantasy 14 producer-director, who is largely credited with completely saving the world of Final Fantasy 14, has announced that they are looking at jump potions. Jump potions are going to be one of two items. They're going to be like microtransaction items in Final Fantasy 14. There will be a story skip potion and a Job Jump Potion.
And now these are currently available in Korea and China, correct?
That is correct. And they have indicated they will be bringing them to North America, which has caused a lot of stir.
Oh, see, now, I thought he was just seeking input.
Well, in this particular post, he's talking about input. He has stated otherwise that this is a goal and something that they would like to discuss.
Okay.
So there has been a very clear indication otherwise that they do intend on doing this. But the community, of course, is very upset. You know, a lot of them getting very elitist in their attitude about, well, if you want a story skip potion, why would you play a online game that is story first? Of course, you know, why should people get, you know, their job classes maxed level just because they spent money? They didn't learn it or take the time or do the work. All of the complaints that you would expect. I personally think this is a good thing because Final Fantasy XIV can be a real bear to get into. Every time I go back to it, I do currently have a subscription for it again. Every time I go back to it, like, I'm hesitant to even invite my friends to come play it because I know I'm dooming them to, like, if you ever want to play with me, you're going to have to play, like, 20 hours story quests, 20 hours of patch quests, and another 10 hours of story quests.
I feel like I've put in way more time than 60 hours, and then I'm not there yet.
Yeah, but you also play these games super slow.
Rude.
Truthful.
So, maybe if someone leveled a job alongside me.
Maybe I leveled a job alone, and you could do the same thing.
Anyway.
Two jobs. I leveled two jobs.
Anyway, you know, all I have to say is that the boost, level boost in WoW, I don't think that's ruined the game. I mean, but then again, you know, a lot of people have very strong opinions about that. And I mean, I think the big thing for me is like the story skip potion. Like you said, like I can't access any Heavensward content until I finish all of this patch content for the original Realm Reborn. And I mean, like my thing is that it feels like, you know, if you were able to do both, but there was still like this other content. But the fact that you're like gated from even doing the expansion content until you finish the patch content, that's been my biggest, like, that's kind of what's held me back because I'm like, you know, I'm so far behind all my friends.
Well, and that's why I'm a big fan of jump potions. Heck, I would endorse people using jump potions as soon as they finish like the Magitek armor stuff in the core game, just because all of that patch content, while the story quests in the patch content were really cool, and like I was on the edge of my seat with like the betrayal and everything, like it was so good, but the literal hours I had to spend doing fetch quests, oh, pick this up, pick up this bottle of wine, take it to this resort, do this, do that, like it drove me mad. I rushed all of doing all of that content in like a week and a half, and I actually burnt out on the game. It was so bad. So like, I don't know, I really strongly feel they need to streamline that content, and if they're not going to, then a jump potion is the next best thing.
Well, they said that you're going to be able to watch the memoirs of the content from an inn, so that I guess you'd be seeing like the cutscenes and stuff, and that they'd kind of put it together almost like, I'm guessing, almost like a Kingdom Hearts sort of thing.
Probably, yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I am no stranger to, I mean, I'm not that I'm no stranger, but you know, it's no secret that I have paid for stuff in MMOs. I would buy story skip. I would possibly even buy maybe like one job potion.
It's just sad because, like, I have to be honest, it's like, I would actually recommend, like, do not play that content. Just use a jump potion and watch the good cutscenes at the end after the fact. And I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's been my one qualm with 14, which is otherwise an exquisite MMO. So we'll continue to follow this. And like I said, I hope that we have it. I hope that we have it sooner rather than later. Hey, maybe they'll announce it at the Final Fantasy 30th thing. But like,
maybe.
Preferably, I would love if, because patch 3.5 is hitting in another
just like
week
a week.
So, right?
Right?
I'd love if they were like, oh, hey, story skip potion.
Yeah, me too. Let's see. Another piece of controversial news here is that the new Mega Man mobile ports are garbage. Apparently, rather than just doing new emulations of the original NES games, these are actual ports of the broken-ass old Java ports that were done for old feature phones. So they don't run right. The music sounds wrong.
Ugh.
All of the transparencies are broken, so a lot of the visual effects just straight up do not work.
The frame rate is really choppy.
Oh yeah, frame rate is abysmal. It doesn't run full speed. Like, that's a problem.
Oh, no big deal. Just a platforming game that's all about timing.
Yeah, so it's pretty embarrassing stuff. People are pretty much unanimously mad about it, and I obviously support that wholeheartedly. Like, this is garbage. Do not download it, not even just to see how bad it is. This is garbage.
Yeah, you'd be much better off doing something like the Legacy Collection, or getting them on Virtual Console or something like that.
Indeed. Let's see, we also have word here of the new NVIDIA service, GeForce Now. This is basically exactly what Sony does for PlayStation Now, except it's going to be on your PC.
And so it's going to be almost worse, I think.
So there's going to be a subscription that will cost you $25 for 50 hours of gameplay, and that will be to stream...
Oh, that's 20 hours of gameplay.
So that'll be... Wait, what was that?
That's 20 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Hours.
Yeah, that's much worse. 20 hours of gameplay. So the interesting thing is that you'll be able to, on your own PC, assuming it's low powered, or on your NVIDIA Shield TV, be able to play, you know, beautiful, full powered PC games. But, you know, they're still going to be streamed, so your video quality is still going to be not ideal.
And
to say nothing about input lag and what have you.
You know, you don't own that game.
No, of course not. It's a subscription service.
And I mean, for me, I don't like that, unless it's a game that I only would want to rent, you know?
Well, you know, it's the same as PlayStation Now. You know, it is a Netflix-style service, but for games. And I definitely think there are some games that are best served playing that way. I just...
Not for that price.
Not for that price. Not for that price. I mean, if you really think about it, you know, $25 for 20 hours of gameplay could be useful if you're just, like, trying to find out, like, do I want to buy this game? Do I want to buy this game? You know, play each of them for an hour and find out. But, good golly, will I not be doing this. And people on the internet seem to agree.
Yeah.
Saggy, do you want to take this last one?
Yeah, Planet Coaster has sued Atari. Not Planet Coaster, Frontier Developments, of course, is suing Atari because Atari still has not paid millions of dollars of royalties from Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 back from 2004. They say that they are owed at least $2.2 million in royalties still. And, you know, Atari filed for bankruptcy back in 2013. It's just a mess. One of the commenters over on Kotaku said, this sounds like a story with a lot of ups and downs, a few twists and turns, but eventually going off the rails. That's a good way to describe Atari and Roller Coaster Tycoon. It's just sad. And I hope that things get resolved. Frontier, you know, I'm big fans of them, and they deserve the money for the great work they did on Roller Coaster Tycoon 3.
Indeed. All right, unfortunately, it's time for a little bit of
Doom and
Yeah.
All right. First up, we have word here that Landmark, the MMO formerly known as EverQuest Next Landmark, will be permanently shutting down next month.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, that is a pretty big bummer. We also have word, unfortunately, that there were plans to do Disney Infinity content for Rogue One. Of course, this sucks. You know, Rogue One is a great movie. I really enjoyed seeing it. Even, like, as a movie, I didn't necessarily love it, but as a Star Wars fan, I really loved it. We apparently got word, Kotaku did, from someone close to one of the Infinity developers that, you know, there was a Rogue One playset with multiple figures coming, but it was canceled early into production due to the end of the Disney Infinity line.
That sucks.
We also have word here that Devil's Third's online servers have officially shut down permanently for online play on the Wii U. We are still expecting online support in the PC version of Devil's Third Online.
There was apparently Crash Mo World in development for the Wii U, but Intelligent Systems ended up working on Color Splash instead, Paper Mario Color Splash.
They were in development concurrently. That was actually one of the big rumors of Emily Rogers, was that Intelligent Systems was doing Color Splash with a second game on sort of the back burner in development that they were going to switch to full speed once Color Splash was done. But instead, once Color Splash was done, they canceled Crash Mo World and started or whatever the new Crash Mo game would have been, and are now working on an all new game for Nintendo Switch.
Hopefully a Crash Mo or Push Mo or Stretch Mo or
some kind of Mo.
Some kind of Mo, is that? Are you talking about me?
We also have word that Square Enix is ending service for Justice Monsters 5 on mobile on March 27th.
Ooh.
This, of course, sucks. The game only went live on August 30th. This is like the pachinko strategy RPG pinball style game that you can also play in Final Fantasy 15, but this was like the online smartphone version. I thought it was fun. It's kind of a poorly designed game, I guess, but I enjoy it. It's just kind of nonsense. Bum that it's going to be deactivated, though. I actually do have it downloaded and installed on my phone, so I'll have to play it a few more times before it dies.
Or you can just go to one of the cafes in 15.
I suppose that's true. Fortunately, though, we do have some good news here, because we have a smash hit, and this is a really great piece, I felt, from Kotaku. This is an uncensored sex game's difficult journey to Steam, and this is all about Lady Killer in a Bind, which I believe we've talked about a little bit here on the show earlier in the year. It's sort of the most recent game by creator Christine Love. It's a game that tackles subjects like BDSM, queer sexuality, power dynamics, kinks, and most importantly, consent. So it's actually a game about sex rather than just being a game in which sex happens and it's meant to be like titillating and stuff. Like, this is actually really meant to explore some of these ideas and themes in an interactive way. I'm actually a big fan of this game, but it's Kotaku wrote this really great piece about how this is getting its Steam release. And interestingly, about, there's a mention of genital jousting in there as well, which I thought was a delight because I'm a big fan of genital jousting.
Oh, yes, you are.
Don't say things like that, you nasty. Anything else about this?
No, I'm just, the just whole idea of censorship and, this this game had some, Twitch had some issues with streaming this game and such, so I'm glad that Steam is on board.
Indeed, me too. All right, well, then let's move forward here and let's start our discussion. So, Slaggy, I know that I've already talked about how I feel like this was a really great year for games. We're going to talk about our 10 biggest news stories of 2016, but I'd like to hear a little bit from you personally. How did your 2016 year in gaming go?
I think it was a really interesting year in gaming. There were a lot of things. I mean, we knew some things going into 2016 that were going to be, that we were expecting. There was a lot of, considering that this is not officially the start of a new generation or anything, there were a lot of things popping up, and a lot of information we got this year, and just a lot of landmark titles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, not for Landmark, though, because it's closing.
Oh, too soon. Well, let's dig into this a little bit then, and let's talk about the 10 most notable news stories of the year. And the first one I want to talk about is No Man's Sky, more like Dead Man's Party.
Ooh.
So obviously the much anticipated No Man's Sky finally released in 2016. Unfortunately, it was not particularly well received. Common complaints, of course, were that, the game systems were not very deep, there wasn't a whole lot to do. After all of the discussion about the game's much vaunted, like, randomized generation and procedural generation, things still felt very, very samey from planet to planet.
Yeah, this was just an example of where hype was more than, there was too much hype over something. And, I guess looking back, I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we had always been a little bit skeptical here on GameBuie.org. And I mean, like, we're not saying this to brag or anything.
You clearly are.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, it's just kind of interesting to see because, when it was first announced at E3 one year or some event, I can't even remember at this point, but, we'd been hearing about this for years. It was like the best of show every year, most anticipated. People were like foaming at the mouth for this. And, so I think that, this was just a situation where the expectations were too high for with the expectations things got too ambitious, but Hello Games really, I think that's the other part of the story, is that Hello Games, basically Sean Murray stopped basically communicating with the consumers. Like, I mean, and to be fair, he was probably in crunch mode, but it was a really sad story, honestly.
Yeah, it is a sad story with a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. They had their foundation update last month, which is really sort of setting up future patches that will bring the game more in line with player expectations. There has been buzz about that, about another expansion hitting in the next week or two, so things are looking up, but it was definitely a big news story this year. No Man's Sky really getting people to sort of look at, like, have we reached the point where the hype machine is out of control? And while I don't think we have a firm answer on that, nor do I think it's firmly answerable, it it is definitely a question that needed to be asked, and I think it's a good thing that people are asking this question now.
And, you know, like, the other thing about games shipping unreleased or whatever, and that, like, oh, you know, this is what happens when you can just easily do a day one patch, that games are shipped out incomplete. It's like, dude, at least you can patch them now.
Yeah, there were games rushed for release that just ended up pieces of shit forever.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, I think for me, that also is an interesting part of the discussion. But, you know, this is something that a lot of people were expecting would have been 2016 GOTY.
Well, and, you know, that actually is the perfect lead into our next news story. And that is, of course, the much anticipated releases of Doom, Final Fantasy XV, and The Last Guardian. You know, all three of these games were delayed for years and years. You know, Doom 4, as it was previously known, Final Fantasy 13 Versus, or whatever, Final Fantasy Versus 13, Last Guardian, Trico. These games have all been like a decade in the making. Miraculously, not only did all three come out in 2016, all three of them are like Game of the Year contender status. Like, all three of these games are works of art in their ways. Amusingly, the one that I think Easy Money would have said was in the worst shape, Doom, is probably the best of the three. And I don't think anyone was prepared for that. You know, there were much highly reported strife within id Software Studios. We had well-known gaming personalities leaving forever who had been with id since its inception. Yet somehow they cranked out a game that has won award after award and will be winning an award later today.
Oh.
Saeed, do you have anything on that one?
No, just that you know, especially Last Guardian and Final Fantasy 15, those getting announced was just like, what? So, I mean, we knew that they were coming this year, but the fact that they actually didn't make it, although very, 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 very late in the year, I mean, they're here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next biggest news story, of course, is the announcement and confirmation of the Nintendo Switch, and confirmation of the fact that it is a hybrid.
Yep, additionally, all those rumors that we thought that we were hearing came true.
Additionally, Nintendo's originally ridiculous sounding full-on focus of Breath of the Wild at E3 paid off in spades, as the game looks gorge and it built an incredible amount of hype immediately.
Oh yeah.
So I wanted to count those as two. Sai, you obviously had some thoughts on this. What do you say?
I mean, it was just really interesting to kind of follow the will they or won't they aspect of the Switch being a hybrid. I'm glad for it. I'm glad that it panned out as it did. I mean, because like I said, you know, as we were talking about, we did multiple episodes about the NX before it was officially announced, and you know, kind of about how this would be beneficial in the gaming space, how especially in Japan it was a really smart move, and the potential that it's going to, you know, have for next year, you know, or not next year, this year, oh my, just a few short months from now, being able to, you know, provide us with gaming on the go. So
yeah, absolutely. And we'll know more about that in literally a few days. Like, by the time you hear this episode, it'll be like, oh, tomorrow or whatever,
right? As far as Breath of the Wild, you know, I just think it's a breath of fresh air for the Zelda series. At least that's what it is promising to be. You know, we've seen open world be more of a trend these past few years. You know, Skyrim was very, very popular in the open world things that it did. Final Fantasy 15 tried to do it. My thing is that with the level of polish that Nintendo puts on their games, Breath of the Wild could be like best game ever, possibly. I mean, at least in the way that at its time, Ocarina...
Careful, your fanboy is showing.
I know, I'm just saying that at the time, Ocarina of Time, you know, was a lot of people's best game ever. It was groundbreaking. I think that Breath of the Wild has the potential to be as groundbreaking as Ocarina was at its time, or, you know, Super Mario 64, even more so, arguably. Anyway, very, very excited. Hoping that we still get it this year. I mean, I don't want it delayed anymore, but like I said, the level of polish that Nintendo puts on their game, it's going to be done right, at least one could hope.
Absolutely. So I want to talk now about Pokemon Go.
Oh, is this Stabcast?
Obviously, you know, we had that epic Super Bowl teaser. Pokemon Go was a big deal. It was a cultural phenomenon across the world.
Pokemon Go to the polls.
Millions and millions of downloads. millions and millions of dollars in revenue. Obviously, you know, the biggest Pokemon mainline game launch ever after that, probably directly related to the Pokemon Go hype.
No, it was all because of Professor Kukui.
It was nuts just how big a deal Pokemon Go was.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's crazy about Pokemon Go is that, you know, and this is not meant to be elitist or anything, but people that I know, friends, who I would not necessarily consider gamers in a big way, were and a lot are still, like, actively playing a lot of, I would say that the people who have collected the most Pokies are, like, people who typically aren't console or handheld gamers, you know, more, you know, and maybe not even really mobile gamers even typically.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't even have a Ditto yet.
The people I know.
And I have friends who, like, you know, don't really game otherwise, but they have, they're like, oh yeah, I have three Dittos. It, two of them came from a Pidgey and one came from a Rattata. And I'm like, damn. So, and I mean, you know, like you said, just the cultural phenomenon that it was. I mean, Pokemon already, you know, I mean, I guess in the past few years, maybe not quite the hype it was back in the late 90s, but it's I would say Pokemania is back in full force because, like I said, we had Pokemon Go to the polls. You know, like the fact that it was part, it played part in the political atmosphere and political memes and stuff. Like, I mean, just like news stories about, like, oh, the Pokemon Go player finds a dead body. It's like, what?
Well, dude, just think back to when it came out. You could literally go outside, and in this area at least, you could, like, go to the mall, you could go to, like, any of the parks, and you would see people playing Pokemon Go. You would see groups of Pokemon trainers all walking together. You go to places like Swiss Chalet in, or Beach Chalet, sorry, in San Francisco, and there was one day that I went over there. There were literally, like, 400 people there playing Pokemon Go.
That's awesome.
I've never seen anything like it. It's the closest I've ever been to, like, this is like Monster Hunter release in Japan.
Right. And I mean, you know, maybe the buzz has died a little bit, but that being said, when I was out here last weekend to record Stabcast, as I was parking, there was a woman with her, I mean, I'm presuming a woman with her daughter. The daughter was walking the dog because the mom was playing Pokemon Go. I could hear her, like, throwing the ball, and then she's like, oh, damn it, because the Pokeball didn't catch whatever she had gotten. So, I mean, there's still people playing.
Yeah, and it's still one of the top grossing apps week after week on the app stores. So, definitely still a huge, huge success, despite the fact that, you know, a lot of haters are talking about how, you know, it peaked and it's dead now. It's not dead.
Well, I mean,
it probably has peaked, but it's not dead.
I mean, for me, just very quickly tying in, I mean, this was the year that Nintendo really went mobile. We had Miitomo, which, you know, I mean, Miitomo was kind of just more of a proof of concept, I guess. I don't really do much with it anymore, but, you know, it kind of set the stage. And then, you know, we ended the year with the iOS release of Super Mario Run, which was huge. So, Nintendo Mobile.
Indeed. We also, in these next two sort of tie together, we had the release of the PlayStation VR, as well as a new mini generation of consoles. Of course, these are both a big deal. You know, PlayStation VR is a new platform release. It's probably the first, like, impulse purchase level VR kit that we have seen.
I was surprised how good it turned out, honestly.
Yeah, it's, I mean, for, you know, a $300 piece of VR kit, $400 piece of VR kit, it works very well, very reliably. It sells the technology. You know, it's not 100% effective, but it's very, very good, particularly when you take that price into effect. Obviously, you know, it's a huge success. It's still nowhere to be found on store shelves. I believe the next restock is going to be mid-February, I was reading earlier today. So, still very much in demand, and a big deal, really proving that VR in the home can work on a mass market consumer level, which there was not a lot of confidence about before. Of course, the new mini generation of consoles is sort of more interesting as a talking point. We have the PlayStation 4 Pro and the Xbox One S.
Yeah.
So what these are, of course, are re-released, like, remodeled consoles. We see that every generation, but these are actually more powerful than the consoles they're replacing. Sort of similar to the Nintendo DS, to the Nintendo DSi. Of course, you know, a lot of people are now saying that we should expect the console generations to be a little bit more like phone generations, where we see these iterative releases every year or two. If this is the dawn of that new cycle, what do you think, Slaggy?
I mean, we kind of talked about that a little bit on one episode. I think it might have even been when we were brainstorming about the NX, but I think that that actually could be a lot healthier for the market. And especially if, like, you know, maybe not for the market, but I mean, for me as a consumer, if I had known that PS4 Pro was coming, that 1S and Scorpio, and 1S is coming, and that Scorpio is on the way.
Well, the thing about Scorpio, we need to sort of keep that sort of not a part of this conversation first, because it's not a 2016 release. But furthermore, we actually don't know. In terms of power, it almost sounds like a new generation.
Mm.
So I don't know that we can call that a part of this mini generation cycle.
True. Well, you know, that being said, and I think we kind of got a taste of this, you know, like you said, the DS series, we had DS Lite, DSi. So, you know, there was definitely and I mean, I guess Game Boy also had its, you know, Game Boy Color.
Initially meant to be a whole new generation, but it just did not take off that way.
Right. So, I mean, we kind of were used to this with DS, I would say. But really, like I said, I think that if this is the wave of the future, then I might be less inclined to jump on board at the beginning of the generation, especially when we've had situations in past generations where they've launched with, you know, not a lot of software, like, you know, PS3s.
Well, have fun doing a podcast where you're not playing any games.
But the thing is that, you know, if they are iterative like this, then, I mean, I guess I see what you're saying, but...
I'm also being a little bit of a troll, because, you know, obviously, if this iterative model is the way to go, then at least in theory, if you have a console of the last few years, you'll be able to play whatever latest and greatest games are, even if they don't look as good.
Right.
So, you know, and I do get that, and I get why, for someone who isn't necessarily interested in, like, always having the most modern experience, I can get why that would, for you, be a plus. It wouldn't be for me, but the more people's whose tastes and purchasing habits are taken into account, the better. Like, more options is never a negative.
Well, let me put it this way. Like, my perspective of it is that, like, for example, waiting instead of doing iPhone 7, doing iPhone 7S or whatever, you know? Is that what we're on? iPhone 7 isn't what we're on now?
Yes. And my thing about that is, and I do get that, and especially when you put it that way, like,
so that
I get
when
it.
When you have the budget.
But the flip side to that is, if the PlayStation 5, for example, games don't work on PlayStation 4 Pro, then until PlayStation 5 Pro comes out, you would be without an ability to play those games. Like, for me, that's untenable.
Right. So what I'm saying, like, right now is that my upgrade cycle would be PlayStation 5 and Xbox 2. But, you know, if I held off a little bit, then I could be on the Pro, which, you know, and you, like you were saying, like, you know, you would not want to sacrifice having older tech, I mean, like, or whatever, that you want the latest and greatest. And
well, I don't require the latest and greatest, but it's untenable to me that a game comes out that I don't have a way to play. Like, that's my thing. I don't mind not having the, like, most optimal experience, but I can't miss the experience completely.
Right. So what I'm saying is that, you know, I'm just saying it gives more options. Like I said, I mean, the thing is that if PlayStation 5 launches and there's not really much that I'm interested in playing, I mean, I love this show, but I'm not going to play a game that I don't want to play just so I can say that I'm playing PlayStation 5, you know.
Okay, so I'll be looking for a new co-host. Good to know.
Excuse me.
I'm teasing, mostly. So,
like I said, PS3 at launch did not have a lot going for it.
No, dude, you know, I say this, I didn't even have a PlayStation 3 until a game came out for PlayStation 3 that I wanted, so...
And that's where I'm at. If there's not something at PS5, Xbox 2 launch that I'm interested in, I'm not going to jump right away.
Yeah, no, and I do get that, and, you know, I'm mostly just busting your chops because I think it makes for good radio, but also because I think it does raise interesting logistic issues that maybe people haven't thought through with regard to their own purchasing habits.
I'm just going to be mad if Switch does this, because I'm definitely getting a Switch at launch. I always get Nintendo consoles at launch. I mean, at least since GameCube. So
look, let's be clear. If Switch does well, there will absolutely be a Switch Plus in 4 years.
Okay, 4 years is fine. I'm talking
about... Well, then
about,
what's,
like,
the difference here, where these consoles had 3 years? Like, is 3 to 4...
I guess
they
have been around for a while, yeah. Anyway, I was just like meaning like 2 years, like 2 years down the line.
Yeah, 2 years to me, unacceptable, but that's where the breakoff is for me. Like, I'm not going going to buy a new game console every 2 years, but every three or four, I'm okay with that. I am. I'm okay with every, if as long as it's more than, as long as it's 3 years or more, I'm okay with it.
I just think of all the 3DSs I own and how unnecessary it is that I have so many.
And see, that's something that's funny because, you know, you sit here talking about me always wanting the latest and greatest, but you have more 3DSs than I do. I can tell you that for fact.
You have like four and I have four, I think.
I have two American, one is an original, and one is a new XL. And I have two Japanese, one is an original, and one is a new XL.
Yeah, I have two XLs, a new XL, and a new regular. But two of them were gifts, so in a way, I only really...
Man, I want to get to know whoever's giving you gift consoles. Holy mackerel. I want gift consoles. I don't think I've had a gift console since I was 16 years old. No, I take that back. I got one as a gift about 10 years ago from someone I was dating.
Anyway, new mini generation, it's, like I said, interesting, and we'll see how this affects the market and consumers and so on. Indeed. I think more choice and more options is good.
Hey, those words themselves came out of my mouth in this conversation. I completely agree. So the next big one, of course, is the announcement at E3 2016 of Death Stranding by Hideo Kojima. This is, of course, notable because it builds on the 2015 news of Konami treating Hideo Kojima like an absolute piece of shit.
Possibly making him do janitorial work.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, obviously it's a big deal. They have a, Kojima has a agreement for the console exclusive development of Death Stranding on PlayStation 4. You know, obviously we have word that Guillermo del Toro is involved, Norman Reedus is involved. So, you know, a lot of the people that he was working with on the now canceled Silent Hills coming into play to work on this new project. We still don't know anything about it as a game other than it looks gorgeous. And, you know, all of the creatives involved definitely going to be making something that's going to be interesting to see.
Oh, and like all of the teases and tweezes and stuff so far is just like crazy. So you can be sure that there's going to be layers and layers of metaphor.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have word that Microsoft Studios launched the Xbox Play Anywhere program. This is a cross-play program between Windows 10 and Xbox One. If you buy games digitally on one platform, you'll also get them on the other. You can play most of the games cross-play between, you know, Windows players and Xbox One players. Definitely sort of making good on the promises of the Xbox platform that many of us have been expecting for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I haven't personally done any Play Anywheres, but I like that this architecture is in place.
Absolutely. We also have word that, or not have word, but we also saw the completion of Sega's acquisition of Atlus, as well as the confirmation that future Atlus-developed titles localized for America will be published via Sega.
Probably one of the best business moves Sega's made in recent times.
Well, you know, you say that, but something also interesting that came to light in 2016 is that Sega has really positioned themselves as a powerhouse in the PC strategy gaming market. They bought up, you know, several studios that are well known for their strategy games on PC, and they appear to be doing very successfully in that sector. So I guess you could say Sega has been, in 2016, Sega did pretty good.
Indeed.
So last but not least, I want to hear talk real quick about a list of game studios that closed in 2016. So we have Avalanche Software, of course, whom you might be familiar with. You know, they did a lot of work on the Disney Infinity games, Toy Story 3, the game, back before they were owned as a subsidiary of Disney. You know, they had done work on games like some of the Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 ports, the Mortal Kombat Trilogy home releases, Talk and the Power of Juju. So, you know, definitely a studio that had been around the block. We also saw the closures of Crytek Black Sea, Hungary, Bulgaria, South Korea, China, and Turkey Studios. Of course, we saw the closure of Disney Interactive Studios, which is sort of like a whole umbrella of various studios, including the aforementioned Avalanche, unfortunately. They did so many games. Some of the Luminous releases, some of the Meteos releases, credited, of course, in Kingdom Hearts, but Kingdom Hearts won't be affected by this. So just a big, big deal. A lot of studios that closed there. Another one of them, of course, Evolution Studios. Previously best known for their work on the World Rally Championship series. In the PlayStation 3 era, they really came to prominence for their work on the MotorStorm series. And then on PlayStation 4, of course, they did Drive Club. Now they are doing nothing, which is very unfortunate because they are really fantastic folks. We also had, of course, the closure of Lionhead Studios.
That was a big one.
Easily most known for the Fable games, but of course, you know, Black and White, the movies, some of the Fable spinoffs. That was, of course, course, still, Peter Molyneux's studio.
I am still salty about
Fable Heroes.
Fable Legends.
Fable Legends, okay. Yeah, that is just really unfortunate. I'm still super mad about it, too. We also had the closure of Endspace. They worked on one of my very favorite Nintendo-published GameCube games called Geist. They also did work on, like, the Marvel Ultimate Alliance ports, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3DS port, a lot of DS port work. You know, they had worked very closely with Nintendo for a number of years. Very disappointing to see them closed. We also have Playdom, who had done a lot of the, like, lighter content for Disney Interactive, a lot of their, like, Facebook and MySpace-type games. So that's always, you know, really disappointing to see. They were also behind the mobile social version of The Incredible Machine, as well as the much-loved Marvel Avengers Alliance games. So definitely, definitely a bummer there. Press Play, whom you might have been familiar with their work on Max and the Magic Marker, Max the Curse of Brotherhood, Knoxville, which unfortunately was canceled. Kalimba, of course, was a game that came out. So it's just very disappointing to see the studio closed. Also, Relentless Software, probably most well known for their work on the PlayStation 2 phenomenon, Buzz.
I remember Buzz. Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah, those games were great. Also had done the PlayStation 3 sleeper hit Mutation Station. Or no, I'm sorry, Mutation Station was, I was thinking Mutation Nation. Mutation Station was actually one of the Kinect Fun Labs games. Another one, and this is one that I think is a major bummer, was Renegade Kid. Of course, their releases, like the Mutant Muds games, the Dementium games, like these were very well loved on the DS, 3DS platforms. Mutant Muds got ports to all of the other consoles. Zeo Drifter was them. Definitely a big loss in losing this studio. We also lost Topware Interactive, probably best known for the Two Worlds games. We lost Two Tribes, which is probably most known for the Tokitori revival game. Rive was coming out through them. They did a lot of licensed work, including Bonk's Return for mobile back in 06. So definite bummer. But the biggest bummer, I would say, is probably the loss of United Front Games. They, of course, are the studio behind the critically and commercially successful Sleeping Dogs. We do, of course, know that they were working on Sleepy Dogs 2 at the time that they were terminated. Hopefully, that game will go on to live somewhere else. They were also behind Mod Nation Racers and Little Big Planet Karting. So those are the big studios that we lost this year. Slaggy, what did you think of those?
Just seems like a lot of really big ones. I mean, not to put down any of the studios that have closed in the past. It's just some really notable ones, like Lionhead, I did not see coming. That was a big blow. I mean, are we going to see any Fable games anymore? I mean, you know.
Yeah, and my guess would be yes. I would guess that Microsoft will do something with that IP, but definitely under different hands, unfortunately. So let's wrap up the 2016 discussion by talking about our 2016 gaming resolutions. We made these, of course, at this time last year. So what were your 2016 resolutions, Slaggy, and how did they go?
So going back to last year's episode, I had said that I wanted to be more open-minded about playing different genres of games. And I would say that, you know, I've definitely kept an open mind, even if my list doesn't necessarily reflect that. You know, I mean, I've definitely been a lot more open to, like, oh, I'll try this game even though it's not a genre that I'll typically play. The other thing I had said is that I wanted to explore more with making games. That really didn't happen, more because of, you know, just various things with, like, my professional life being very busy and, you know, not, you know, choosing not to focus my free time on that instead of, you know, playing games instead of making games. So that didn't quite happen.
All right. Let's see. My big resolution was to spend more time with fewer games. I'm actually happy to report that I did do that. I both bought fewer games this year than I have in previous years, and I also played more of the games that I did buy.
Yeah,
so.
I don't recall seeing big stacks of unplayed games, like, that would basically become a running joke in the studio.
Yeah. I haven't really done that this year, and I'm actually very proud of myself for it. So way to go. So the interesting lead into that, of course, is that we also want to mention, because we're going to talk about are in each of our top 10 games lists, but I real quick want to mention the games we missed. And of course, for me, this is sort of a discussion point because these are all games I played but didn't complete, with one exception. Stuff like Watch Dogs 2 and The Last Guardian, The Witness, Inside, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Bravely Second End Lair, and Kirby Robobot. They're all games that I have started. All of them I love. Literally all of these games could have been Game of the Year competitors for me based on how much I've enjoyed them so so far. I just, how do I say? I didn't finish them. For like Kirby Robobot, it just came out in a time when I was professionally very busy. So I started it, was loving it, put it down for something else and just never got back to it. Same with like Bravely Second. You know, unfortunately, Last Guardian only just came out. I only got my copy like a week ago. So, you know, I've played it. I love it. It's beautiful, but I can't, you know, until I know how it ends, I can't really talk about it too much. And it's like that for The Witness. I'm enjoying the time I've spent with The Witness very much, but I haven't finished it. There's a lot there. I'm told Inside is really short. I bought it, meant to play it, didn't get to it. That's sort of the outlier here because all of the other games I mentioned I played and loved just didn't play enough. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of broke mine into a couple different categories. The first one is that there was, like you said, some really big AAA titles that came out at the end of the year that, you know, just with this, with December just being really busy and, you know, with Final Fantasy 15 being, you know, that the really big release at the end of November, I did not get around to Watch Dogs 2 or The Last Guardian, even though, you know, I've heard really good things about them and I anticipate to play both of them. I missed out on a couple of well-received indies such as Firewatch, The Witness, Stardew Valley, just kind of ones that I always was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll pick them up when there's a Steam sale, you know, just, you know, they were on my radar, but I just didn't get around to them. Did not get a chance to really finish some longer games like Fire Emblem Fates or Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE. You know, of course, very. I put those both under the category of Fire Emblem games. You know, both very good, but just did not get a chance to finish them for, you know, like I said, just kind of like personal time reasons. And a similar note, things like Bravely Second, Yo-Kai Watch 2. I just didn't get around to because I just at the time was like, you know, do I have the time to really put into an RPG? So definitely want to put time into those, just haven't been able to yet. I also missed out on some of the Square Enix side games, which I included, in which I included World of Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest Builders as the big ones. I definitely would like to at least definitely World of Final Fantasy is something that I really would like to get around to. And then the last one is Super Mario Run, but that was kind of a little bit out of my control because I do not have a device on which to play it.
That makes sense, of course, unfortunately.
So there were, like I said, a lot of games that, you know, definitely were on my radar. But that being said, I had a lot of great games to put on my list as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, then, with no further ado, let's get down to brass tacks.
And we're alternating again this year?
We will alternate again this year. So I'm going to start, of course, with the number 10 pick. This is, of course, the best rockumentary about why your band broke up. And this award is going to Rock Band Rivals. You know, Rock Band Rivals on initial announcement was somewhat controversial because, you know, they're doing an expansion and they did not add any new songs. This was quite controversial. And, you know, it seemed a little bit bare bones, not like a full release. But now that I've played it, you know, the rockumentary stuff is super fun. They fix sort of the way that sorting works. There are more options for customization of your characters. Overall, for me, it was a really great expansion of one of my favorite games of all time.
All right. The first game I want to mention is Best Google Maps Implementation in a Mobile Game, which goes to Pokemon Go. You know, we talked about what a phenomenon it was. You know, for me, like, I don't really do a lot of mobile gaming. It's just not really where I choose to spend my gaming time. I also don't have a commute, so, you know, that definitely plays into, you know, not having, you know, a much of a desire for mobile gaming. But, I mean, especially, you know, during the height of Pokemon Go, it was huge, and I've been getting back into it. So, you know, definitely a real game changer, and I'm really excited to see it grow.
Excellent. So my next pick, number 9, best game that is finally out of early release, goes to Speedrunners.
Ooh, good choice.
And, you know, this would probably seem like a little bit of a weird pick because I have thrown parties centered around this game for years now. It feels weird to be picking it, but, you know, it's finally a released product. You can go on Steam and buy it and have the full game experience. All the bugs and kinks are worked out, and it's just a phenomenal phenomenal multiplayer game. It's one of those games that, like, when I play it, it feels like Nintendo should have made it. Like, it has that sort of, like, quick and easy to learn gameplay loop, but, like, it's easy to learn, but, like, really hard to, like, be super good at. I just, for me, it's one of my favorite games to play when I have friends over, and I highly recommend it to anyone who does, same screen multiplayer PC gaming.
Excellent. My next game is Best Haunted Island Adventure with Radio Puzzles, and that goes to Oxenfree.
Yes.
This was, I mean, for me, the indie title standout of the year. I mean, it was something where, and I mean, you know, full disclosure, I actually watched you play it almost all the way through. I fell asleep towards the very end of, you know, the climactic parts, but, you know, I watched you play through most of this game before I played it myself, and
when you finally did get around to playing it, did you do, like, the second, like, the patch stuff that they added?
I did not.
Okay, yeah, they expanded it. It's a much bigger story now. There's more to it.
Well, I'm gonna have to go back and, play it again then.
Heck yeah.
But I mean, just the, it was something that, like, and what really stood out to me when I was watching you play it that first, because I was like, that was like right when it came out. I don't know if it was.
That was literally the week it came out.
Yeah. So it was a few days after its release. You're like, oh yeah, I heard that this is pretty good. And, you know, you started it out and, like, the more that, you know, we got into it, you know, for me, that was a big testament is that the fact that as someone just watching you play the game, that I got so involved in it. I mean, it was really something else, and I would say there was a lot more than meets the eye. You know, when you hear like, oh, it's a kind of pixel art-ish adventure-y sort of game, you're like, oh, okay. But, you know, it's there's so much potential from these folks.
Absolutely. So my next up is my best dating sim that isn't a dating sim. This is, of course, pick number 8, Fire Emblem Fates. Fire Emblem Fates for me is sort of the perfect Fire Emblem game. You know, it's split into two different branches, and actually also a third branch. One is, of course, in the more casual style of game that we got with Fire Emblem Awakening, and of course the other is sort of more in line with the traditional difficulties of the Fire Emblem franchise. And what this for me ended up being was just a really fantastic way to sort of side by side see which style of Fire Emblem game I prefer. It does turn out I actually do prefer the more casual style of game, although I'm definitely a permadeath on kind of guy. I really love the characters. I actually really enjoyed the Fire Emblem Fates storyline a lot. I just overall had a really, really great time with it and would call it a must play.
Excellent. My next title is the best interactive revival of VH1's Behind the Music, which is Rock Band Rivals. I don't want to go spending too much time on this because you already mentioned your take on it, but I just thought they nailed the Behind the Music aspect really perfectly. And like you were saying, even though they didn't really have any, it wasn't like a new release with new songs and etc., the fact that it gave a new game mode, one of the things I really enjoyed from Rock Band 4 was the, you know, going on tour, and like for this to have like you know, a new way to experience the game and have fun with it, like I thought they nailed it. And I think I feel like that's the right way to be using this game as a platform, rather than, oh, here's another yearly release. I mean, because, you know, they're already doing the monthly DLCs, and you know, so I mean, for me, I feel like that's a better use of their time than just to secure a bunch of songs and then put out another title that maybe looks a little bit prettier, you know. So other than that, yeah, it really revived the game too. Give you another reason to go back to it.
Awesome. So my number 7, of course, is my best game about broing out with your mecha buddy, and this goes to Titanfall 2. So Titanfall, of course, was well known for not having a single player campaign. That was actually when they made Titanfall 2 something that they focused on doing. They did a fantastic single player campaign, and it's interesting because it's only about 4 hours long, but or 4 to 6 hours long, but when you play it, like, it is just so well done. The dialogue is super well written. The story is really good. The gameplay is super spot on. It's it's almost a better it actually is literally a better Mirror's Edge game than Mirror's Edge 2 was. So just a really fantastic game, one I highly recommend playing even if you're traditionally not interested in first person shooters.
Awesome. My next title is Best Town Building with Supplemental History Lessons, and this is Civilization 6. Now my category, yes, is a little silly, but you know, we just recently talked about Civ 6 on our Civilization episode. I really enjoy it so far, and like I said, it's as far as, like, you know, core version of Civ, it's the most fully featured one to date. And I really just, I like the changes a lot. It's no secret how much I love Civ. So was definitely happy that this one turned out so well and fixed a lot of things that I felt were still some minor issues with 5. So maybe not the most friendly jumping in point, but definitely one of my top games of the year.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, well, we have number 6 here, and this is the best game about mining your nostalgia and looking Fabula Nouveau doing it. And this is World of Final Fantasy. World of Final Fantasy, of course, is a beautiful game. It just looks very pretty. But in addition to that, you know, it covers a lot of the big story beats of the core Final Fantasy games. It really makes use of the history and legacy of Final Fantasy while also being a new and kind of fresh experience, sort of a new take on a turn-based command, you know, JRPG. I had a really great time with it. If you're a fan of classic Final Fantasy games, I definitely think you need to look into it.
Excellent. My next game is Best FPS for OTPs, and that's Overwatch. I mean, this is definitely the case where, you know, I had said being open-minded about genres, you know, Destiny? Was that 14?
It was a couple years ago.
Anyway, you know, like, Destiny, like, was one of the games that really helped me be more open-minded about, like, oh, this is a genre I usually would not even touch, but I am totally having a good time with it. I'm pretty bad at Overwatch, but the game, I recognize that the game is designed well. I mean, for me, like, the characters are so much fun to play, even if I'm really not the best at it, you know? And the other thing that, you know, this is something that Blizzard always does exceptionally well is the world building. And, you know, we had the big news of Tracer having a female lover. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily that she's lesbian or bisexual, but I mean,
they've actually talked on the off the record, I should say, that, you know, it is their intention that she is a lesbian.
That's excellent. But I mean, you know, we have just a huge fandom that's built up around it. But I mean, that's just the silly part of it. The fact is that it's a great team shooter. Really, like I said, you know, a genre that I typically don't really play. I did have a lot of fun way back in the day with Team Fortress 2. And this is, I think, like, you know, the next step to that. And so I just need to spend more time actually, you know, gaining the skill in it. But, you know, like I said, the fact that I'm not that good at it doesn't mean that I can't recognize that it's one of the best designed games of the year.
Excellent. So my pick for number 5, of course, is the best game about momentum. This award goes to Doom. You know, Doom, the thing about it, Doom is first person shooter design, especially for like single player campaigns, is that they're typically very like stop and go, off and on affairs, a lot of waiting, a lot of like, oh, I need to stop and recharge my shield, so I'm just going to do nothing for 15 seconds and totally break the pacing of the game. Doom is not having that. Doom absolutely rewards you for always moving forward, always shooting, always melee attacking, all about chaining your attacks from one enemy to another. It is just an absolutely frantically paced game that I think is absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, obviously the majority of the game's media agrees. Expectations for this game were very low. You know, it was not given advanced press copies for reviews, which a lot of people took as a negative sign. All of the DLC that was planned before release was all multiplayer DLC, and amusingly, the Doom multiplayer, not much to write home about. But all the single player DLC isn't really a thing. Like, single player DLC in Doom isn't really a thing, and that's a huge missed opportunity. And I think it says a lot about the fact that maybe id Software didn't expect the game to be as well received as it was. As it is, I think that in doing away with sort of like weight based mechanics in first person shooters, they actually addressed something that a lot of people were tired of, that sort of stop and go motion. emotion. People want to play these games feeling like a badass, destroying demons with, you know, the butt of the rifle to their face, and, you know, chaining their attacks from one to another.
I was going to say, for a minute, I thought you were talking about a very different type of game. Destroying demons with your butt. The best game about destroying demons with your butt is...
But, you know, I definitely think that they were onto something with the design of this game. I really think it's what those gamers were looking for, and it was certainly what I was looking for in that space. So, number five goes to Doom.
That's awesome. You know, that's one that I actually should say that I probably missed out on, too, because I really was entranced by all of the, like, customizable stuff and map building stuff. Like, that, I like that sort of thing.
Snap map.
So, that's something that I should probably get around to, especially since you said that it's not, like, stop and go, which is a problem that I've had with a lot of FPS. I should check into this, so.
Yeah, no, it's like the go of first-person shooters. With that in mind, go.
All right, well, my next one is best useless trivia / offensive party game combo pack. That goes to the Jackbox Party Pack 3. I am a huge fan of, I mean, I've been a fan of the Jackbox games, you know, over the years. You don't know Jack games. And then the Jackbox games to follow it, you know. Like, these guys always do a fantastic job, and I think Jackbox Party Pack 3 has some of the best games. I love Trivia Murder Party. It's, you know, it's basically, you know, takes the kind of the You Don't Know Jack sort of idea and puts it in with the, like, you know, just the spooky silly concept. TKO, where you design t-shirts, is like Drawful on another level. And, you know, when you're playing with our circle of friends, it gets pretty offensive. So just so much fun. And pretty much anytime there's been a party situation, it's also another great one for people who maybe aren't, you know, typically consider themselves gamers, still, like, can have a lot of fun with it. And that's what, I mean, that's for me the greatest type of party game, is, you know, where lots of people can have fun.
Excellent. All right, well, then I want to talk about my number four pick. This is the best card game about horse racing, Pocket Card Jockey. You know, a lot of people were interested in Pocket Card Jockey because of where it comes from, which of course is Game Freak and those fellows over, most known for doing Pokemon games.
And that's one I missed out on too.
On Pocket Card Jockey, which is really hard for me to say for some
Wasn't
reason.
Saliti Horse?
Saliti Horse, yeah. So it's basically a horse racing simulator where all of the mechanics of the game are run through Solitaire, the card game. I played it when it first came out in North America. Every day I was playing it. I was leaving work early so that I could, like, be on the train sooner playing Pocket Card Jockey. I really enjoyed this game. I think it's super addictive. It has a very simple hook. Most of us already know how to play Solitaire. And it just also has really great risk reward mechanics. It's an eShop download on the 3DS, and I think I would call it a must play. Yeah. I'm really surprised you haven't played it, Slaggy. I think you really need to.
Yeah, that totally slipped by me, especially how much I was talking about Saliti Horse over the years. I have some, I think I have some value in my eShop, some money in the eShop that I need to spend, so I should do that, like, tonight. My next game is Best Fake Disneyland Creator, which is Planet Coaster. Again, we talked about this a couple months back when Planet Coaster came out. You know, I love roller coaster sims, and I mean, this is for me everything that I'm looking for in a modern coaster building sim. You know, just a lot of heart, which is, you know, something that Frontier does really well. Pioneer, that's an anime buoy discussion. And just the level of customization that you can do, like making the buildings and stuff. I mean, there's just, I've barely scratched the surface because, you know, I just love to watch my little park grow, but I mean, I have barely even touched the surface, and I can't wait to see the community continue to grow with this, especially, you know, when you think about it, this really is the sequel to Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, which was released in, you know, 10 more years ago, so this sort of game with the Steam Workshop, it's just a perfect fit, and so, like I said, really excited to spend more time with it and continue to create.
All right, so I want to talk about my number three pick, and this is the best game about expectations and the management of same, Super Mario Run. Fun fact, my original, because I built this list going from number one down, my original tease for that, of course, was actually best game about momentum. but I thought that was better awarded to Doom, obviously. The thing with Super Mario Run is that it is absolutely a fully-fledged 2D Mario game, complete with, like, multiple routes through levels and all of that. To me, it is the best 2D Mario game in years. I think that the stage designs are fantastic. I think that the extra stuff, while completely extra, is also a lot of fun. Stuff like, you know, doing the score attacks against your friends and everything. Oh, I just have nothing bad to say about Super Mario Run. I know that a lot of people do, unfortunately, but I just don't get it. Like, I think it's a fantastic game, and I think most of those people who are complaining about it, that has more to do with their perception of the value of games, and particularly mobile games, than an actual honest assessment of Super Mario Run. I also have to add, you know, and I talked about this when I talked about Mario Run a few weeks ago, I think most of the people who are complaining about it and comparing it to other, you know, runner games, yeah, are really not considering, like, how actual stage design impacts these games. They're not thinking about, like, sort of that special mix of physics to Mario, the way that his momentum works, the way that his jumps arc and everything. These are things that are absolutely correctly captured in Super Mario Run. And it's, you know, it's, again, it's the same feeling that makes people prefer Super Mario to Sonic. And that it's the same reason why I prefer Super Mario Run to Sonic Runners or whatever. No hate on Sonic Runners or whatever. Just Mario's a better game. Deal with it.
Excellent. My number three is Best Fan Service in an MMO. That award goes to World of Warcraft Legion. You know, I've talked a lot about my time with Legion over the past few months. Definitely one of the best expansions to the game, probably since Wrath of the Lich King. You know, we now know that Chris Metzen has retired, so it's no surprise that he really wanted to, you know, and in some ways you can see that a lot of this fan service, you know, with Illidan and, you know, a lot of the things coming back from, you know, some of the more well-loved WoW expansions, really kind of as his goodbye to the company. But I mean, aside from the story and the fan service, just the way that the, particularly the end game is structured, fixes a lot of problems that the game has had over the years. And I mean, even the leveling, like the way that you can level in any zone and, you know, I know definitely with some of our guildmates, you know, they were like, oh, I'm going through High Mountain. I was like, oh, cool. I'll go and do some quests there with you. And even though I'm higher level, it doesn't matter. So, like, you know, really.
All stuff Final Fantasy 14 had already done.
Yes, but I mean, you know, then again, there's things that Final 14 has not done that WoW has done better. So, I mean, I think that in a way, almost, I don't know how much truly it is about competition between the two, but I think they both push each other to be better games. And like I said, we saw a lot of great quality of life stuff coming forward with Legion. And you know, we just had a recent patch added where there's like the quick finder and stuff, so lots of it's like, you know, the thing that's great about an MMO is it continues to grow with its expansions. And like, I'm just really excited. I haven't been able to put a lot of time in lately, but I, you know, still subscribe, still try to log in a couple times a week, at least just to do, you know, a few quick things. And that's the great thing about World of Warcraft is you can hop in for a few minutes and, you know, do something to help you progress. It's great.
Excellent. All right. Well, then I want to talk about my number two pick. This is, of course, the best bromance simulator, Final Fantasy 15. You know, it's a little bit of a shock to be talking about Final Fantasy 15 in this context. Final Fantasy 15 is a game that, by all means and all reasonable intent, should be a mess. Instead, it comes out as Square Enix pushing Final Fantasy into new directions and largely succeeding at exploring new ideas within this much storied franchise. You know, I know that the bro road trip selfie simulator aspect of the game isn't necessarily loved by everyone on the internet. I was a big fan of it. It really raised sort of the connection that I felt to the characters of the game to heights that I don't think I've really felt connected to Final Fantasy protagonists since the 16-bit days. Something that's really interesting for me personally is that, you know, some people with like the voiced dialogues and like 3D, like normal human dimensions of people's bodies and proportions. For some people, that makes it easier for them to, like, relate to characters and imprint with them. For me, it makes it harder. Since Final Fantasy X or so, it's been really difficult for me to care too much about the characters in these Final Fantasy games. That might be why I like 12 so much, because the focus was less on the individual characters and more on, like, this bigger political world story. The Final Fantasy 15 was the first Final Fantasy in a long time where I really cared about every character. I cared about their motivations. I cared about their backstories. I cared about their feelings. And that alone for me is actually a huge deal. Then icing on the cake, you know, it's beautiful. I'm actually a fan of the story. I'm interested in it, even if I do think certain parts of it needed to be fleshed out more. Overall, I liked it. You know, and I liked the combat system a lot. I had a lot of fun with it. So overall, Final Fantasy 15 for me was a huge success and the second best game I played this year. What about you, Psyche?
Well, my number two game is Best Road Trip Selfie Simulator, sponsored by Coleman Camping Equipment and Cup Noodle, which is Final Fantasy 15. You know, I recognize that it's not a perfect game, but there's so much that it does right, and there's so much, you know, this is a game that I've been looking forward to for so long that I really appreciate the risks that they took with this game. I think it's, you know, even though, like, we literally at a buddy's birthday dinner yesterday heard some drunken folks talk about, yeah, man, I heard that the new Final Fantasy game sucks dick. I mean, like, so, you know, there's been a lot of controversy and a lot of heated opinions about this game. I overall think that it is a fantastic game. You know, I recognize that, like, 13, again, was another game that got a lot of hate, but I thought was not nearly as bad as the hate that it got. That being said, there was a lot riding, no pun intended, on the success of this game, and I think that, you know, even though there were some rough spots, overall what they were doing in the heart of the game is just what really made this a special game for me.
Excellent. All right, and my pick for Game of the Year 2016 goes to Overwatch, which I describe as best dating sim that pretty much is a dating sim. I don't know what I can really say about Overwatch that Slaggy didn't already cover. It is an expertly designed and balanced first-person shooter. I think it's easily the best arena first-person shooter that's ever been made, and I have a really hard time imagining it being topped anytime soon.
Fantastic. My Game of the Year goes to the best tropical pet raising simulator, Pokemon Sun and Moon. Of course, you know how much I love Pokemon. This is by far the best Pokemon game in the series, and something like Final Fantasy 15 has a lot of heart. You know, we've talked a lot about it in depth over on Stabcast, same type of attack bonus podcast, so I'll kind of defer you to that to really hear our deeper thoughts on it. But you know, just something that I feel like they've pretty much hit all the marks in the right way. Makes me really excited for the future of the franchise.
Excellent. All right, well then, with all that having been said, let's quickly list off our honorable mentions. I'm just going to do all mine, then you do all of yours. My honorable mentions are going to go to I Am Setsuna, which I thought was, you know, it was a really great and competent Chrono Trigger clone, but that's kind of what it is. I enjoyed it a lot, though. I do think it's worth playing for lovers of old JRPGs. Just know what you're getting into. Hitman, where Square Enix took a really forward-thinking position on the way they did episodic content, and I think knocked it out of the park. It's a really great release. Probably, I think, my favorite Hitman. Far Cry Primal, really fun game. Shantae Half-Genie Hero, which is just phenomenal. Pokemon Sun and Moon, which, again, I think is the best in the series. And probably the only reason it's not on this list is because I've talked about it so much. I'm just sort of over it.com. Still a great, fantastic game. I'll come back to it, but right this moment, I'm taking a breather. Owlboy, which is, of course, a really adorable 2D Metroidvania game. I'm loving it, but I haven't finished it yet. In fact, you can include in my honorable mention all of those games I discussed and the ones where I was talking about the games I missed. All of those really competitors for Game of the Year should probably have been on this list, but I just did not have the time to finish them, and it would be really inappropriate for me to pick a game I hadn't finished as one of my big, like, top tier games. And last but definitely not least, Oxenfree, which just an absolutely phenomenal game. Absolutely phenomenal. What about you, Saggy?
My honorable mention theme this year is Japanese arcade gaming. And two of them are because they're kind of expansions, so to speak. I don't know what arcade speak you would use to games that did not come out this year. That's Groove Coaster.
Updates.
So we have Groove Coaster 3, Link Fever, and Crossbeat Rev Sunrise, which are, you know, a lot of fun. I got to play them yesterday. And then the other one astonished just because I only played it for the first time yesterday, even though it's a 2016 game, and that's Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy All-Star Carnival. So I feel very lucky that I have access to these games. Hopefully more people will get a chance to play them, particularly Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy All-Star Carnival.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's wrap this up. We're going to talk about our most anticipated games and events and predictions of 2017. This is an easy one for me because all I could think about is one thing, and that is Nintendo Switch. I cannot wait for this Thursday. It's like practically the only thing on my mind. I am hype to the point that I have tunnel vision. I can't even like see anything else. What about you?
Yeah, Switch is the big one for me. I can't believe it's coming so soon. You know, we'd originally thought it would be out in 2016, but hey, we're almost there. So we've got two more months to go, pretty much. I really don't have any predictions. You know, I guess maybe it's because of the Switch tunnel vision. Like, I really don't know what we're going to see otherwise, but I have some games I'm really excited about. Persona 5 is a big one, of course. And the other one that I'm really looking forward to is the release of Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5 HD Remix Collection, whatever
they
call it.
Yes, someone's talking about Kingdom Hearts and it isn't me.
And then, of course, 2.8. I unfortunately did not get around, even though I own a copy of 1.5 HD Remix, I did not get around to it. So at this point, I'm kind of like, I'll just wait and get 1.5 and 2.5 and play them together, because full confession, I never even finished one, let alone two. So and I know that you've judged me heavily for that. So no, but I'm really glad that there's so much opportunity to play Kingdom Hearts in pretty PS4 realness. So
indeed. All right, so let's talk about our 2017 resolutions. My big one is that I want to play more indie games. I played a lot this year, but I always want to bring that number up higher.
Oh my god, that's my resolution too.
Yeah, we definitely need to get back to the left of center stuff.
Right, and you know, there's, like I said, so many that I missed out on this year that I really had no excuse not to. I was distracted by a lot of AAAs this year, so.
Yeah, me too. All right, well then, let's get this show on the road. We really need to wrap this up. Let's go right into our rumors.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
We have domains registered by Sega Europe for Shenmue HD and ShenmueRemastered.com. And also ShenmueGame.com. Or sorry, no, ShenmueGame.com.
I'm pretty sure that's a typo.
No, it's not. The reason it's spelled that way is because the one with the proper spelling was registered in 2015 by a gentleman named Mike Dobbin for GoDaddy.
All right. Well, either way, it definitely looks like we are looking forward to something via Shenmue. Let's hope we know more about this week, maybe Thursday. We also have word here that Puyo Puyo Tetris has gotten English language PlayStation 4 trophies along with language icon for the game. This doesn't necessarily confirm a North American release, but if you're paying someone to create content in English, you probably plan to release some version of your game in English.
Yeah, Puyo Puyo Tetris is great. We played it. What did we play it on, your PS3 or your PS4?
We played that on Xbox One. I imported it.
Oh yeah, because you could do that.
We also have word here, very similar, Sega 3D Fukoku Archives 3.
What did you say?
Fukoku?
Rude language.
The Miiverse community for Sega 3D Fukoku Archives 3 in North America, when you view it, is called Sega 3D Classics Collection 2.
Oh my.
So again, you know, very similar to what we were just talking about. Somebody had to manually enter this in. They could have kept the Japanese language name, but instead they created a new American name for it. While no such release has yet been announced, I would definitely keep your eyes open for this potential release down the line.
Excellent.
This week, we're a little short on time, so we're going to skip what's up and move right on to our social links.
All right, we're going to go into our question of the week. This week, we're talking about the year 2016 in gaming. What were the top games and news stories in your opinion? So we have Monarch Piratica, also known as Trainer Sulker from Stabcast, saying the games Pokemon Sun and Moon, Pokemon Go, Final Fantasy XV, Overwatch, and WoW Legion. Wow, those those were five that were on my list too. Good taste.
For some reason, a lot of crossover.
For some reason, the tweet gives the option to translate from Finnish. I don't know why. Salker's news stories were or news story was the Nintendo Switch reveal. Definitely one of the big ones for me too. Your Enzyme said Overwatch and Oxenfree are my big picks for 2016. Great choices. That Retro Code says top games for me were Titanfall 2, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Paper Mario Color Splash, and the big story was Breath of the Wild at E3. Oh yeah, lots of hype there. Rider Blade says Kirby Planet Robobot and Pocket Card Jockey were killer 3DS games that so many best of lists missed IMO. Some great games. We have a lot of listeners with great taste. Not saying that we have listeners with poor taste. To wrap up our Twitters, we have a tweet from the William Brown saying, "Totally digging the AM realness, the AM radio realness you guys are serving this week." Our last episode, as you might have noticed, unfortunately had some audio processing issues and kind of sounded like it was going through an AM radio filter, but the William Brown liked that. And a sweet message from Emiru69 saying, "My husband, heart emoji, gamebuoy.org." It's actually the heart with the arrow through it emoji. He said if he wasn't married to me, he would want to be married to Spike Point and Slackick. Awesome podcast. Aww.
Aw, that's super touching. Thank you so much. We heart you guys.
And all your cute farm animals.
Yes.
All right. With that, we love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We also like that stuff on, what is it, Google Play and Stitcher Radio. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We do effing love Twitter.
You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
Hit us with those shout-outs.
All right. Our first shout-out goes to the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can hear such shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal ever so many of our cues, the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko discuss the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series, upon which it's based out of Japan. And last but certainly not least, for VOG shows, we have the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. You should also check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out Slagkick's show, Reading is Fundamental, upon which I appear, as well as Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness. We talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I would expect that one to be coming back in the next couple months. Slaggy, what about you? Take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with VG Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit chat among friends, La Palanca Podcast, Pori para gay gamers Latino Americanos in Espanol, and the Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. I'd also like to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister show, Enos Lives, which is also just not just a sister show, but also a great source of articles and stuff from the folks over at Nintendo Fun Club, including a great article about the PlayStation V. You just go and check it out. You will not regret it. I'd also like to shout out to our other sister show, which is not a buoy, but it is a Stabcast. That's same type attack bonus over at Stabcast.org, your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. And our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They forever closed their doors, unfortunately, a while back, but will forever be pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain, and I can barely speak, so let's wrap this up.
Oh, thank God. All right, everybody, thank you so much for another lovely year with us. 2016 in the world of gaming was a good one. In the year of our actual lives, not so much. Let's hope 2017 is better on both, because why not?
Yeah, looking like it's going to be a good 2017 year of gaming. We're excited to bring you more Game Buoy content, and just thank you for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you. I hope you've had half as much fun listening this year as we've had talking. Truly, 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 it means so much to us that you spend your time with us these lovely Sunday evenings. With all that having been said, I'm hungry. I'm gonna go to Panera. So keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy.
You pick two, half sandwich and half salad.
Yes, that is probably what I'll eat. Thank you. Speak into your mic for me.
In the arms of an angel.
Speak into your mic for me, Slaggy.
So I've been noticing on, speaking to my mic, Stabcast, that I might need to adjust, because I know that you two are like sharing a splitter or whatever, and I notice that sometimes I come across too loud on that show. I was trying to just talk with my normal voice, and the problem with...
The funny thing is you projected your voice so much more this time than you did in the first one. Like, the first one was fine, and then this one, yeah.
Well, because I was trying to talk like I actually would on air.
You don't actually talk like that on air. You talk not facing your mic.
Well, now right, you have your fine. Blooper, bitch.